This is Digital Story Podcast number 714, November 19th, 2019. Today's theme is Luminar 4, One Redesign Too Many? I'm Derek Story. This week launched with a bang as Luminar 4 hit the streets early Monday morning. And even though it's too early to judge if it's going to be a runaway success or roadkill, the redesigned edit module has many version 3 users steering for the exits. We'll take a closer look today and try to determine if this is just a mere fender bender or will result in total disaster. Hope you enjoy the show. The minute I opened my first picture to edit in Luminar 4, I could see the comments that would immediately surface after its public release, and that's because they redesigned the edit module. Now, this is going to be actually the focus of today's show. I'm going to touch on the new filters, of course, we need to talk about those, but the edit module is the thing that people are going to be talking about, especially those who have been using Luminar 3. And why? Because essentially, to be perfectly honest, in my opinion, what Skylim did was they chose to fix something that wasn't broken and then ignored the thing that really needed work. Okay, so the thing that wasn't broken was the edit module. It was really nice. And the thing that so many of us liked about working in edit mode was that we could set up these workspaces that were perfect for whatever we were doing. I had a workspace set up for portrait work. I had a workspace set up for my street photography. And then I would have all of my filters in the order that I use them there in the workspace. It was very efficient, and I could set up workspaces for Luminar as a standalone app, Luminar 3, as a standalone app, and also as a plugin. So I was digging these things, and many other people were as well. And it wasn't hard for me to find filters because, first of all, I already had them kind of set up in my workspaces. And second of all, if I wanted to find a filter that I didn't normally use, you just open the filters drawer, do a little search, just type the first few letters of the filter and it's right there. And then you just add it to whatever workspace you're in. It was really a nice system. Well, it's all gone now. Workspaces are no more. And what Skylim did was they set up these categories, these hardwired categories that force you into their vision of how the edit mode should be used and don't allow you the flexibility of your vision on how you want to work on your photos. That, I think, is a big mistake. Now, there's a couple things here to note, just generally speaking. Generally speaking, as you move from version to version in software that people are using, you don't want to overhaul the UI every time you do that because it upsets folks. And as one commenter said, look, I don't have time to relearn software that I've already learned. I'm busy, I need to edit my photos and get on to the next thing. And I think a lot of folks feel that way, myself included. So software redesign, UI redesign, I mean radical redesign, especially when you take away functionality, is something that you think about long and hard before you do. And I think a lot of users, a lot of Luminar 3 users, are just going to feel like Skylim isn't really respecting how they want to work. And by changing this much easier to use, and I'm putting that in quotes, edit interface, then they are just discounting, you know, their existing user base or many people in their existing user base. That is going to annoy people. That is really going to annoy people. And Adobe has made just like little changes to Lightroom and Photoshop over the year. And we all saw the firestorms that resulted from that. Okay. The other side to this is that while they redesigned the edit module so that it has these preset categories, you know, professional or portrait or whatever, with the filters locked into those categories, so they did that. But on the other hand, the library module is virtually untouched. And this was the thing that I think people who really wanted to embrace Luminar as their photo management answer to either not subscribing to Adobe for Lightroom and Photoshop, or to migrating away from Aputure now that Catalina doesn't run Aputure natively. Folks that are just have been looking for a solution, and we're hoping that possibly Skylum would give them a library module that they could use on a daily basis and then take advantage of those wonderful image editing tools that are in Luminar that many of us like a lot. Well, the library module has been virtually untouched. So no changes there, where I think a lot of users wanted improvement, not to change the design of the module, just to add more functionality to it, just to make it a bit more usable, and then changing something that they didn't want. And that was what I was leading off the show with. And I think that is going to be the hot topic of discussion when it comes to this version of Luminar. All right, so there's all of that. We needed to get that out of the way at the top of this story. Let's talk about some of the additions and improvements to Luminar 4, many of which are quite good. First of all, there's a new AI sky replacement filter. Now, I've seen people talk about this thing both ways. Personally, I like it. I think it's pretty cool. And essentially, what Luminar does is it identifies a sky in a photo, so it knows what area is the sky. And then when you use the AI sky replacement filter, then you have a pop-up menu that gives you some preset skies that you can choose from, and then you can modify them using the tools, the sliders in that filter, or you can add your own sky, and then Luminar just puts it in the right spot and then allows you to tweak it very quickly. It is easy to use, and I think overall the results are pretty decent, at least on my tests. There's a new AI skin enhancer. Now, one of the big requests that I heard over the years for Luminar was make it better for portraits. It's great for landscape, it's great for street photography, but what about those of us who shoot portraits? We need more tools for portrait photography. They have done that starting with the AI skin enhancer, which works quite well. Not only will it just make the skin look nicer, it will also use AI to remove blemishes. Okay, so that is pretty cool and it works well. And then there's an overall portrait enhancer that has all sorts of things, things that I've seen from other applications, such as making the eyes wider, making the eyes brighter, brightening the teeth, making the lips more saturated, you know, those kinds of things. And again, it uses its intelligence to identify what part of the portrait are lips, what part of the portrait are eyes, you know, that kind of stuff, and then limits the changes that when you move that slider, limits those changes to just those parts. Interestingly enough, however, they did things like in the portrait category, put the Orton effect filter, which I use for all sorts of stuff. In fact, I don't use it for portraits that much, but I love it for urban photography and landscape photography. So now it is forever in the portrait category, so I have to remember to go over to portraits even if I'm doing street photography work. This is going to be the thing that annoys a lot of people. All right, there's a new smart contrast filter. Again, works very well. And there's a new AI structure filter, which I played with on portraits, and I thought it was pretty effective. What's nice about it is that the slider is set in the middle, okay? So you can increase structure, and when you increase structure, what it does is it increases structure in the environment, but it protects the skin tone. So it doesn't make the skin have more detail, but it does in the surrounding environment. And I was testing it, like for instance, when the subject was standing against old bricks, stuff like that. Now, what I noticed was that when I decreased the structure, in other words, I really wanted to kind of soften the detail in the photo, it would also soften the detail in the skin. So when you move it to the positive direction to increase structure, it protected the skin, but when you moved it in the negative direction to decrease structure, it also affected the skin tones. I was okay with that, but I think the cleaner thing would have been to just leave the skin alone altogether in this slider, only work on, you know, things like buildings and walls and trees and stuff like that, use your AI to detect a face and just protect that all together and let the photographer decide what he or she wanted to do to the face separately with another filter. So I'm okay with it, but some folks might not love it that it affects the skin when you go in the negative direction. It has improved LUT mapping. That's nice. Has an improved golden hour filter. Has an improved denoise filter. And it has an improved adjustable gradient filter. Now, one filter that is gone is image radiance, which was possibly my favorite filter in all of Luminar. But I don't think it's really gone. The name image radiance is gone, but now there's a mystical filter. And I think mystical filter is the new image radiance. I don't have any verification from Skylum if that's true or not, but it appears to be very similar. I don't know if they reworked the algorithm or not. It's hard for me to tell. What I do know is that the name image radiance is gone from Luminar 4, and possibly it's been replaced by a mystical filter. Okay. Duly noted. Okay. Again, why do that? Why take that away? Why rename it when everyone has been using it? That makes no sense to me. All right. So for the most part, the AI filters, I think, are impressive. And for the most part, they work as advertised. So where does this leave us with Luminar 4? I think it's kind of an interesting place. So here's kind of the way the numbers work. So if you're upgrading from Luminar 3, it's a $69 upgrade. All right, so $69 to get 4. If you're a first-time buyer, right now it's $89 for first-time customers. Now, as I said in my review, my written review, by the way, that's on the Digital Story right now, and it has screenshots, and I go into more detail about AI structure and portrait and all that with pictures. So if you are interested in Luminar 4, you might want to go over to that article and take a look at it, and you get the visuals with it. So as I said in that, I think that first-time users of Luminar will be impressed by the AI technology in there and those wonderful filters that many of us have liked for a long time. So I think that camp will be fine. I think the camp that we're going to hear the most from are the Luminar 3 users who have embraced the application, who are looking at a $69 upgrade, and who may or may not like the changes that have been made to the UI in the edit mode. And I think that's the camp that we're going to hear the most noise from here over the next few weeks. And in all honesty, I'm not sure where I fall with that either. For instance, the latest version of Luminar 3 is macOS Catalina compatible. They did an update so that Luminar 3 works with Catalina just fine. So you could continue using Luminar 3, having the UI for the edit mode, if you like that UI, having that UI for both your plugin and if you do it standalone work, it's all there. And really, the thing that you don't get then is AI structure, AI sky replacement, those new tools, which are very nice, right? Another way to go is to go ahead and pay for the upgrade, so that you have access to the new tools when you want them, but continue using Luminar 3 as a plugin for Lightroom, as an editing extension for photos for macOS Catalina, you know, all those different ways. Continue using 3 and then only tap 4 when you want those new AI tools. If you need structure, if you want to work on a portrait, you know, going to Luminar 4 definitely gives some advantages there. Now, in that case, you're saying, okay, I'm paying $69 for something that I will only use some of the time. But again, I'm just being practical here. If you really hate the new edit mode, if you miss having your workspaces, you're probably going to use Luminar 3 most of the time. And then there may be moments when you want Luminar 4 for those special tools that you don't have already. Now, there is a 7-day trial available for Luminar 4. If you're an existing user, you can download it and just say, okay, what do I think about this? You know, do literally a pros and cons list on this thing, where you list out the pros for Luminar 4, you list out the cons, and then you just see how they stack up. And then you see, okay, are they worth $69? Now, there will probably be some deals on Luminar 4 up the road here before too long. So since Luminar 3 does work with macOS Catalina, and I'm assuming it's going to work, continue to work on the Windows side as well, then there's no hurry to make any sort of decision unless you absolutely need those tools right now. So that's kind of where we are with this. And personally, the route that I'm going to go is I'm going to hang on to Luminar 4 for those times that I need it. And I'm going to use Luminar 3. I use it as an editing extension for photos a lot. I'm just going to continue using Luminar 3 because I have my workspaces set up. I like the UI the way that it is. And I'll continue using that most of the time. That's the route that I'm going to go. And the big missed opportunity, just to circle back to the library, is that this was the version that they should have done something major with the library. They got the library out the door, you know, with Luminar 3. That was great. You know, we all cut them a lot of slack with it because, hey, it's hard, you know, to bring that functionality into an application. But I think also at the same time, it was a legitimate expectation to improve the library with the next major release of the application. That's a missed opportunity. I think it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, what happens with this application over the next year. I'm going to post this story on Facebook, this podcast. And if you want to chime in with what you think about the Luminar 3, the Luminar 4, if you're a new user just trying 4, all that kind of stuff, please comment, because those comments are really interesting and they help other photographers. New details for our upcoming LA street photography experience. I've had a lot of fun working on this, and you know, working on a street photography workshop for Los Angeles is much different than it would be in San Francisco or Boston. San Francisco and Boston, the actual physical area is smaller, it's more dense, where Los Angeles, as you can imagine, because of Southern California, is just spread out. And so you're kind of thinking, okay, you know, we're not going to spend our whole workshop sitting in freeway traffic, right? That's not going to happen. So fortunately, I have a lot of experience with Southern California, having grown up there and still having family there. And I know the ropes pretty well, and I'm using that experience to plan this workshop. So what we're going to do is we're going to stay in Santa Monica. I have a cozy little place in the Santa Monica neighborhood, not far from the iconic Santa Monica Pier and from the Metro Rail Station. So the Expo line goes all the way to Santa Monica. Then what we're going to do is that we'll either do day trips like to Venice Beach, which is very close. Obviously, we're going to go to Santa Monica Pier, which is just this iconic place. This is full of shots, as is Venice Beach. Then when we go into LA itself, we're going to ride the rail, and we're going to be on the Expo line, and there are all sorts of great stops along the way, including probably ending at the Hollywood and Vine stop right there. And that way, we will ride the rail. We will have opportunities to shoot along the way. There'll be probably opportunities on the rail itself, opportunities to review our photos in between shoots while riding the rail and not sitting in traffic. We can even have small little meetings and stuff. So I just think this is going to be really great. We're not going to be sitting in traffic, not going to be doing any of that nonsense, yet we're going to get to the spots that I really want to show you. You can tell I'm somewhat excited, right? So, and of course, we're going to have Olympus educator Mike Baining with us. Those of you that worked with him before, he is fabulous, and he's going to be part of this workshop. If I've got you sufficiently excited, we still have some seats left. By the way, all the workshops are being reserved at a very nice clip, and they're all almost even right now, which rarely happens. It's usually like one or two maybe jump out to the front and the other sort of lag behind. All four of 2020 workshops are kind of going at the same upward pace, which makes me feel good. But we still have seats open for not only that workshop, but the other workshops too. Humboldt Redwoods, Eastern Sierra. Yes, we still have got some seats open for that. And we even have a few spots open for our summer workshop where we're going to go to Lassen Volcanic Park. That one's going to be a blast too. And that's where we get to stay all together in this very wonderful cabin at Lake Almanor. So, hey, everything's looking really good. But right now I'm getting locked and loaded on the LA street photography experience. If you like this kind of stuff, if you really want to get out there and learn more about street photography, experience Southern California in a way that, you know, you probably never have before, go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops, and you can get on the reserve list for either street photography in LA or the other workshops. Don't drag your feet if you're really interested in this, because these things have a way of just kind of fill, and then boom, they're full. Alrighty. And I will keep you updated not only on the street photography workshop, but all the other three as they continue to take shape. Very exciting workshop season in 2020. I hope you come out and join us. Souping up my Olympus EM5 Mark II to feel more like an Olympus EM1X. This was just one of those weird kind of discoveries that I hadn't planned on at all. And then when it happened, I go, wow, this is neat. It really was. So here's what happened. Now, first of all, you know that I have tested and wrote a review on the Olympus EM1X. And what a cool camera that is, right? Brand new, state-of-the-art stuff. Olympus really just went to town, especially under the hood. But the other thing that they did was they made it one of the most comfortable Olympus cameras ever to hold. It has the built-in, you know, grip for both horizontal and vertical shooting. And no matter how you hold this camera, it's comfortable. I mean, it's really, really comfortable. I mean, that kind of like makes your hand feel good, sort of comfortable. And it has a holder for an extra battery. So you can have two batteries with you all the time. And they're easy to change. So you're just going, wow, this is really a cool feature of this new state-of-the-art camera. So that was all kind of still with me. And I pulled out my EM5 Mark II. By the way, the EM5 Mark III has been announced, right? And people are very excited about it. It looks like a terrific camera. It really does. But I'm still using the EM5 Mark II. I like it. You know, sometimes you just sort of like a particular model. And I wanted to do some extended shooting with it. So I thought, okay, I've got the grips around here somewhere. Let me dig them out and put them on the camera so I can have two batteries. So it's the HLD8 power battery holder. You can get it still at B&H for $279. It's two pieces. So the first piece is a grip that has its own shutter button, has a dial, right? Has the control dial around the shutter button. Most of us use it for exposure compensation. And then because the EM5 Mark II was really designed for high definition video as well as still photography, they went ahead and added a headphone jack to the grip. So then when you put that grip on, you have the microphone jack on the camera itself, and then you have the headphone jack on the grip. It's really a nice little setup. The second component holds the battery and provides the vertical grip. And this is all part of the HLD8 power battery holder, these two pieces. So now you have a second battery, and then it screws into the bottom of the first part, right? And then you turn it vertically, you have this very comfortable grip. You have another shutter button, you have a vertical shutter button. You have two control dials, you know, so you have twin dials right there. And then you even have two function buttons. So, I mean, you have all of that control in the vertical position. So essentially, whether you're shooting horizontally or vertically, you have all this, you know, cool control. And guess what? It feels a lot like the EM1X. And so that's what started all this. I put this all together and I got it on there and I took a few test shots and I go, what does this remind me of? Oh yeah, it reminds me of the EM1X. So I thought, I got to share this. So I did a post on Digital Story, so you can see the shots, and it has the links to the battery holder and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the reason why I'm bringing it up on the podcast is that I know we have a lot of EM5 Mark II photographers listening to the show, and that you can get the EM5 Mark II for a pretty good price these days. If you have an EM5 Mark II already, take a look at this battery holder. I mean, it is a really nice upgrade to an already very good camera. The thing that I really like about the second battery, you can set it up in the menu so that the camera draws from the battery that's in the battery holder first. And that one is really easy to change because it's just a little door on the side there. Super easy to change. You can do it really fast. You can do it easily when it's on a tripod, you know, all that kind of stuff. The other thing that I like that I didn't talk about in the article is that it has a wrist strap lug in the bottom of the battery holder. And that is a really nice place to put the wrist strap because the wrist strap works in both the vertical and the horizontal mode that way. Whereas when you have the wrist strap on the camera, great in horizontal mode, but not so good in vertical. Whereas when it's on the bottom, it works in both. I just had to share that with you because for me, it was a cool find. If you have an EM5 Mark II, you might want to take a look at it. It really makes you kind of fall in love with the camera all over again. Do you have a film camera that needs a good home? So over the last year, I've received some great donations from TDS members who have film cameras that just need a good home. And the way it usually goes is they'll write me using the contact form on the Nimble Photographer. And there's actually a category for donating film cameras. They'll write me and say, look, I've had this thing in my closet for a number of years now. It was a great camera when I used it, but I'm not going back to it. Can you put it to good use? Can you get it out there? And the answer is, yes, I can. And what happens is I take the camera in. I take it into my little mad scientist laboratory here. That's actually in the same room as where I record the podcast. I refurbish it. I get it all cleaned up. I test it. I film test it. I do all that stuff to it. If I can get it working, which I do most of the time, then I can put it in the film camera shop. That's where students and artists who want to return working with film or who love film work can get a reliable camera, much more reliable than most of the things that you see on eBay, because I've actually tested it, because I know how to work on these things, because I've run film through it, and because I'm honest. So there's all of those things. So it's just really a great way to get, you know, cameras that aren't being used into the hands of people who want to use them. And at the same time, it helps support the Digital Story. It's a win-win-win all the way around. If you want to do that, if you have a camera that you want to get out there and working again, all you have to do is go to the contact form that's on the Nimble Photographer, thenimblephotographer.com. Click on the contact form. Let me know what you have, and then we'll take it from there. I have a little bit of virtual camera club news. First of all, starting out with a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. Thank you so much for your support. Thanks so much for your input as well. I just know that when I go to you all with a question, especially if I'm working on a show or something and I really want some thoughtful feedback, I know I can get it from you. So in addition to financially helping to support the show, but also spiritually and technically helping to support the show all the way around, it's just, you're invaluable. You're absolutely invaluable. If you want to become part of the Inner Circle and the elite segment of this community, all you have to do is go to the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can take a look at our site there, our Inner Circle site. If you like what you see, consider supporting the show and just know that I appreciate it so much. We have tiles for both Amazon and B&H on all the pages of the Digital Story. If you click on them first, if you're thinking about getting something that we've talked about here or something else, if you click on those tiles first, that helps support the show. Those tiles and the links in the articles Those are affiliate links, so they have code in there that ties them to the digital story. So when you make a purchase via those links, we get credit for that. And sometimes we get financial compensation, which again helps support the podcast, but it doesn't cost you any more. So a big thanks to folks that do that. They either use the links in the show notes, the articles, or the tiles on all the pages of the digital story. And finally, be sure to visit our friends at Red River Paper for all of your inkjet supply needs. I'm working on a project right now for my boys. They have a new place. My twin boys are living together with a friend in San Jose. They all have these cool jobs. One boy works for the San Jose Sharks. One boy works for the San Francisco 49ers, and their friend's got a really cool job as well. They have this nice little house in San Jose, and they wanted a picture wall that had like this homey feel of shots of them doing stuff together. And they asked me to help them put that together. Guess what I'm printing that on? Yes, Red River paper. I'm putting the whole thing together for them on Red River paper. And they love it. I love it. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that sometimes really shows photography in a different light, in a very meaningful light. If you're interested in maybe putting together a printing project or doing stuff for your family, making your office look more like you, then go to Red River Paper. There's a tile on all the pages of the digital story. You can learn all about inkjet printing. You can get the supplies that you need. They are just great, and their support is wonderful. And they have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you found my report on Luminar 4 useful. That is the goal. I think it really depends on what you want. If you're a Luminar 3 user, you need to decide for yourself if this is going to be a useful upgrade for you. I hope that I got you a little closer to that decision. I'm working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.